So welcome everybody to the November 9th Finance and Facility Committee meeting. Let's review the minutes. Are there any issues with the minutes? Concerns? We're good? All right, we'll move those forward. Tonight, the lion's share of the conversation will be around the 2015 proposed tax levy. And with that, Ms. Becky Allard will be walking us through a presentation, recognizing that this will also be at the full board, so she may just skim through this part of it so we're not, especially the three of you, aren't having to relive it twice. But she'll kind of pick and choose.
I'm going to leave this slide open for right now, and then I'm going to talk to the document. There's a cover memo that talks about the process that we have to go through, and the whys and the wherefores of why we ask for a tax levy. And frankly, a tax levy is just the process of asking the county for dollars. And you have to do that by the last Tuesday in December. We are in a county that has been subject to property tax limitation law since the early 1990s. I think it was 1991 levy that was first effective. And simply put, that we can, we are limited to the dollars that we collect to the lesser of 5% or the CPI. And the CPI isn't the average of the prior year. It is just the December number of the previous year. So we are asking for a levy increase based upon a CPI from December of 2014 of 0.8%. There was a worksheet in your packet that showed you a historical perspective. The one you have in your packet takes you all the way from a historical perspective. I told them I wouldn't say hysterical. historical perspective back to 2009, but for trying to make this clear to anybody sitting in the audience or looking at it when we're streaming during the regular board meeting, I've only given you last year's and what we will use for budget planning and what we actually think we are going to get asked for in the levy increase. So if you look at the shaded columns, if I may, this is what we would use for budget planning. So we think when all is said and done, when the levy is finalized in April or May, that we will have a levy extension that is 1.96% greater than what we have in 2014. You ask for an amount greater than that because there are a couple of factors that we absolutely do not know at this point in time. And that's what our actual assessed value will be and what our new construction will be. So I do know that I could take this number and multiply it by 0.8%, and I will at least get that under the PTEL formula. But then there's something called new construction, and as I have driven around Glen Ellen since I got here in September, there's an awful lot of growth going on. There's, I'm assuming, teardowns and building up much larger homes. And I think that's been going on during the last couple of years. But the one thing we don't know is what that assessed value number will be. And so you tend to make some guesstimates and estimates so that you can capture the dollars that you need. One of the things that we're going to say during the board meeting is that I caution boards every year, but in particular this year, because of the conversation going on in Springfield. Not the conversation about what we may be losing in state revenues, because that's a question mark every year. But because there is a conversation going on in Springfield that basically says that they're going to freeze the 2016 levy based upon what the tax extension is for 2015. And if that should happen, then you're going to be losing anything that we could gain based upon the 0.8 increase for the next several years. There's also something down there they're talking about the cost shift in TRS, but because the state hasn't finished its business, which should have been done last May, There are still a lot of variables out there that we just don't know yet. Any questions on the calculation? The calculation that's made and what we're asking for tonight, because really this is a dialogue at the Finance Committee, and I would like to answer your questions as we go along, so feel comfortable interrupting me and saying, Becky, that makes no sense, and I will try to clarify.
So the minimum we're guaranteed is 80 basis points.
Correct.
Or count.
Right. Because that's what the December of 2014 CPI was.
Okay.
So the formula...
Just one thing on new construction, because it's when you drive around, you see things being constructed, you see them done. We're building next June and next September for the EAV of 2015. So something getting constructed has an EAV that's different than an ending of a full.
Right, it has to be on the tax rolls as of the end of this fiscal year or this calendar year.
Yeah. Or if they'll do a partial assessment for the year if the building is completed or partially completed during the year.
Right. Every county, every township, although the assessment practices are supposed to be the same, truly they're different practices in each county, each township. And I've had conversations with the township's office, and actually I couldn't even get through to the assessor's office, but they were kind of relaying my conversation back to them. And they said they would not give me any preliminary numbers. They just didn't feel comfortable doing that. So I went back in the files and really looked at what left. Again, the history of what the assessed value is. So frankly, for the assessed value next year, for this illustration, I'm not suggesting that there's going to be any increase to the EAV. If you look at the history of it, you can see that we have... declining EAV, and we are slowly starting to pick up, but I don't know what that trend's going to be, because I think it has been this way, and then slowly, and I don't know if it's going to dip again, and again, you don't know that until. I was telling somebody earlier today that I used to be very proud of the fact that...
that was me.
Prior to 2008, when the economy took a downturn, that I was pretty good at projecting EAV based upon history and pretty good at projecting tax rates and pretty good at projecting what your actual tax extension would be. That just isn't the case anymore, and it hasn't been since 2008. Any questions here?
Well, we talked, so stuff in that minute. So.
The other documents that I have in your packet, and again, we'll go through these when we have the entire board here, was the student taxation resolution that we'll be asking you to approve tonight. The certificate of tax levy, which is the document we actually filed with the county clerk, and then a notice of what the newspaper, our notice in the newspaper will look like if the board approves the administration's recommendation tonight. Questions? Patrick, I know we had a conversation earlier today.
Yeah, we had a conversation, and I sent the Excel spreadsheet to Paul to send it to the board. And basically, you know, it might be a good idea to flush it out here in finance and see if it's a cockamamie idea or if we want to take it to the full board. But basically what I was saying is with the 80 basis points that we're going to get from the county, it's almost a wash, you know, in terms of getting revenue from them. So I was wondering, for this levy, if we hold the levy the same as last year, you guys can pull this up on Google Docs if you need to, but if we hold it as same as last year, it's a net revenue decrease of $339,000. I'm sorry, Becky, you should have got this.
I have it right here.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And so what that does is we're saying we would hold this levy conversation or this levy for next year flat as it was last year. And just say, you know, 80 basis points is 80 basis points, and it's not, and the difference is $339,000. To make up that $339,000 at that levy tax rate of 3.674 basis points, it would be about a construction rate, new construction of $9 million. to give us that, to make up that difference. And to be clear, I did not include, and I was just doing it as you were talking, I did not include the increase of expenses to the $43,262,000 for the 16-17 budget. So if you add $339,000 in the last revenue, lost revenue, plus the expense increase from $42,429,000 to $43,262,000 between the 2 years, that's about $832,000 difference. So which would take your new construction probably to around $10 million. From a board perspective, I was just trying to get people's thoughts from finance here. Is it possible to go to the community and say, let's have the tax levy for next year flat, a 0% increase, and just hold it? And then any deficits we have around $832,000 would come from any makeup that we have in new constructions at the tax rate and maybe any reserves that we might have.
I thought this was actually interesting, not a bad idea. But as I told Stephanie and I met with Becky last week, and the day before I had been fishing with a village trustee. Some people call it Michael fishing. So, and we had this conversation where the village, for me, it's always made, even when I was on the Park District Board, it never made sense to me that we were, and I'm getting around to where you're at with this, Pat, never made sense to me that we were going to send a levy without a budget. You just don't know what you're asking for, what you need. Always made, it would make logical sense to me to have your budget, and then you can play around with what happens if we go with zero, what happens if we negative it, what happens if we positive it, and you can work your budget, your framework, your budget within what you want to do. So, so as we move forward, I'd like to see us actually in some future meetings actually start to discuss that, because the village of Glen Ellyn actually switched theirs a few years ago. They actually have their budgeting process in the fall now, and so they know the framework work of their budget when they're going for the levy. So the concern for me in this particular scenario is we don't necessarily know the new construction portion of it. Now, as I talked to this trustee last week, he indicated Glen Ellyn, their staff should be able to, and I talked to Becky about this, which she would not have known this, but he was fairly confident their staff would be able to give us a breakdown north of Roosevelt Road 41 within the village limits of what their new construction is. And I said maybe moving forward, you know, Becky could have some conversation with the person that we bring in, that maybe this is something to give us better forecasting for new construction to find out what Carroll Stream and Wheaton within those pockets, what we have for new construction. So we've actually got some better things. So so I guess I'm a little nervous in that, you know, as much as I'd love to see that, I am a little bit nervous about the new construction portion of it. And again, you know, the shortage, that there's a possible shortage there, you know. And again, I'm probably as fiscally conservative as you can find in terms of this stuff, but it does make me a little bit uneasy. I'd almost feel more comfortable with getting the budget righted and done in the proper format and then looking at some of these things. My other concern is, and I don't know, this is not a criticism of staff. Maybe it's a criticism of Joe more than anybody else, and I'm not trying to pick on anybody. But again, this is the conversation. I'd like to see some of this stuff prior to us then talking at the full board so that we can vet some of these things out and actually, you know, have a couple of weeks again to figure out what we want to do before, you know, we take some action on it. So those are my opinions on the matter. So,
you know, and I think I used this phrase last week when we were talking. I'm just passing through. I have 100 days here. And typically what I would do during my budget presentations, both in May or June, and again, before you adopt the final budget, is talk about the levy and what that would look like, so that this isn't a new conversation. We should be, every time we talk budget, we should be talking levy. I think there's a tool that we will be presenting at a February board meeting for financial forecasting through PMA Financial that looks at the next 5 years, and then I think we can play some of those what-ifs. What if you levied zero here? What would it do to fund balance? And frankly, we could stand here during the presentation and you would see the effect of that immediately. So, Patrick, I hope you can be patient with me until February when we bring you the financial forecast model and demonstrate that in front of the full board.
Go ahead, Bill.
Thanks. The couple comments, and then I think this is a good discussion. The new construction numbers, they're, we had brought that up to Bob many moons ago, probably 2 years ago, when I first was presented to the levy. Sounded similar to what Kurt had said, because in my business, it's easy to get permit and pull permit numbers. Permits have values of construction on it. That's how they pay the fees at the village level. Those are usually short of the real construction numbers, but ultimately you can pull that. It's once again, if you need to pull them from last fall, because those permits were getting pulled to start construction, so projects were done in the spring. You still only have a partial assessment. The timing and the sequence of it all is very important on the construction side. Figure out when your EAV gets pulled.
When it's going to hit the tax rolls.
Right. So there is a gain, even if you know all those numbers, and you said this in your presentation, so I'm just reiterating what you said. You don't know the assessor actually did that. So it's even more a wild card, Kurt, if you've got all those permit numbers and those valuation, the project cost numbers that are on permits, you still could be wrong, because the EAVs may not be right. And one other thing, Patrick, if you look at the, and this goes to EAVs, just segue there, EAVs can go down on existing projects, and they have. In the historical presentation, which Becky is not on the, on behind because she shrunk it to 14 to 15, but what was presented to us in our board book shows that. And that can happen, and it does happen. It could happen simply because somebody knocks down a house that they're going to rebuild 2 months later or 6 months later. There could be a vacancy in a house, and there's a vacancy petition put forward. So EAVs change. So
would it be, Joe? Would it be a needle mover on EAV? Because it's $1.1 billion in expected NAV.
Well, look at the EAVs over the year. I mean, EAV, in 2009, it was down 48 million. Then it went down down another at 100 million. And then it went down another 90 million. Then it went down again in 2013. And then it went down again in 2014. So every year the total EAV has gone down. So it's a mover. And that's the part that you were describing.
Yeah, that's what Becky's talking about. Up to 08, you could have just said it's going to go up. We don't know how much, but it's going to go up. And since then, it's been a roller coaster.
It's more of the downward part of your roller coaster. It's not the up part. We haven't seen the trending upward. And that, that therein lies the trick when you start not increasing levy. So to me, it's an issue. The sequencing of our budget being after the levy, Kurt, I agree with you, Patrick and I. I mean, we have been pushing that to the best of our ability and not to your satisfaction or our satisfaction. It does make an issue. And to me, this is kind of where I've said this before.
When have we ever talked about that?
We've talked to Bob about it here at our finance meetings about five-year projections, moving things up, changing things. Bob, when I got here, his presentations were totally different than his last presentation. It was totally different.
It was
apples and oranges.
The budget, moving the budget to the fall, I can't imagine. I mean, it's not a staff decision. It's a board decision to go ahead and say we're doing that. So I'm just saying.
We've been pushing it with Bob to get it. So I'm not going to get into debate about that.
Hold on, Rob. I mean, you don't have to push the staff. The push is the board. I mean, the board should have the discussion. I can't imagine that this if the board directs staff to do the budget in the fall, I mean, I think it's a little disingenuous to say you've been pushing on it.
I don't think it is. I mean, I guess...
And I'm not going to get into semantics with you about it, but I've been here since May, and I sat out there for 2 or 3 years, and I never once heard this board talk about moving the budget process ahead of a levy.
Well, I don't think we said that exact words. I know, in fact, we did not say those exact words.
Well, that's what you just said.
No, I did not. I said about moving it up. And we've been trying to redesign it, and we have successfully redesigned some of it.
And I don't doubt that.
We didn't get to the point where we wanted to so that we get 5-year projections so we can make better levy decisions. I think if you go back to finance committees, which if they're on tape, I suggest you do, Patrick was championing this. So I don't deserve any credit. He's the one who championed getting these 5-year projections, and Bob finally got them to us the last time around. So I don't think I'm being disingenuous. If you think I am, then Kurt can, but that's fine. The last thing I'd say, and this is not the last point, with all the uncertainties, the sequencing of the budget, which is wrong, I agree with Kurt, with the unknowns that we have in Illinois with state funding, various other unknowns at the county level, the assessor level with the AVs as we see them going down, I think you know, my projection is you hopefully see a shift up starting soon, maybe not this year, but probably in the next couple of years you will. With those unknowns, I think we have an obligation to look at the minimum increase that we can do per PTEL. If there is a surplus, then it's we should feel, if we've met all our expenses, the fiduciary responsibility to abate that. Now, how you abate it, I will debate how to abate with you when the time is appropriate, because I think there's good ways to do that so that there's a complete understanding of the taxpayer, what is it getting abated, when it's getting abated, and that there isn't confusion on future tax bills like there has been in the past. So that's my position on it, and I'm fiscally conservative, maybe not as much as Patrick or Kurt, but I know I'm very fiscally conservative. But I think at that point, we have a responsibility here as board members to make sure that we can do the programs we want to do. And given the sequence, and given the unknowns of EAV, and given the unknowns of new construction, and given the unknowns of state aid, we're sitting here today and have to make the best decision for our school. We will know everything. And once we know everything, we then can make the executive decision to abate or not. I think with the unknowns, you have to move forward in the best case scenario for the school. And once you have, then you look and say, okay, we had a surplus of $333,000. How do we abate this? And that's how I would move forward.
And remember that the 2015 levy will fund the 2016-17 school year. So when we bring you the first draft of the budget in May-ish, that we should at least know what the levy extension is, if not finalized, at least draft form, so that you will be able to look at this, the levy that you adopt or put forward tonight and adopt in December with some certainty. On how to build your expense side of your budget, because you will have a pretty good handle on what your revenue is going to be for 16-17. By law, we have to adopt the budget for that 16-17 school year by September 30th, 2016, the end of the first quarter of that fiscal year. I know, as I have looked back in the past, I think we have adopted that budget in its final form in June or July. I have never adopted it that soon because there are so many changes.
Been generally around August.
Yeah, August
is our.
That begs the questions and the example when you were fishing, Kurt. The village budget, their 215 is on a calendar year, right? So when they're getting their levy in June and in September, they're covering 215 January 1st through 216 February 1st through 216 December 31st, 216. So they're actually, it's easier for them.
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the question.
Their fiscal year is different than us.
Yeah, so that's a key part of the point you brought up. it's probably something we can look up.
I know when we talked, Becky, you guys did it in Park Ridge. You guys did it in advance, right?
We didn't adopt our budgets until September that year. And Cook County is its own animal. And timelines are much different in Cook County than they are.
Well, you get Cook County's would get their first payment in March.
In March.
So.
Based upon an estimate.
But that's just half. No EAVs are known, and they don't do it until
August. You know, one of the unique things for me in this district is that you use the entire levy, so the entire 2015 levy, to fund your 2016-17 school year. Let's go back to my Park Ridge example. We use those March receipts, early collections in Cook County, as a part of the 2015-16 budget. So our whole entire budget for taxes were based upon estimates the year before we had any clue as to what it would be. So I like the process here, but I would probably wait until September, only because of staffing and hiring, and you can pretty much lock your budget in if you wait until September to adopt it. But that's just primary.
Yeah, but that what you're doing is we would just be following the same timeline that we're following now.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't change to Kurt's ask to move the budget forward.
May 1st to December
31st?
That was the 14, was May 1st, 2014 to May 31st,
2014.
So you don't want to make April. One of the concerns I have, we talked about at the last meeting, when you're looking for places to save money, and Patrick's right, the levy to the budget, that doesn't always equate. You actually have to have a budget and then a levy for that budget, so that you're not in a position where you've got surplus. And it's been my belief that around here, surpluses have been, they really haven't been abated, so they've been spent at some point.
Yeah.
So, but I have concern because I sat here at the last meeting, and other than Stephanie and I'm trying to figure out where we're going to try and save money. Because, the TRS payments were right there. I saw nobody really, other than Stephanie and I, looking at that as a possible... a possible way to begin the process of saving some money and taking some of the burden off the taxpayer. So I get concerned. Maybe it's not a bad idea. Maybe we do zero this out. Maybe we force ourselves to actually have to say if there's a shortage. Maybe the board's then forced to have to say we have to make some cuts and here's where we have to make them because the revenue's not there. I don't know.
That's certainly a strategy. It's been used in other companies. Just for the record, it's January 1st. Through December 31st.
Okay. So then planning your budget
it's a lot easier.
August, July, August for the following fiscal year makes sense for the city to do that, the village to do that. Because we will start talking budget shortly.
So you basically approve it before your fiscal year.
Becky, what's the protocol for school boards to reduce reserves to make up levy shortfalls?
I don't know if there is an official protocol, but that goes to district policy and what your fund balance policy is.
Right.
So that if your fund balance policy... I think it's a minimum of 10 to 25 maximum. That if you were falling somewhere close to that 10%, I would be concerned about not loving the dollars. Because I wouldn't want to stand here and recommend to you to violate your own board policy.
No, it's possible. And I don't want to, as they say in Kansas, eat the feet from the people.
Well, and I wonder, I still am foggy on how much money we have. We talked about that. I'm foggy, and Becky had some ideas on how to make that better. I'm foggy on how much we have in our rainy day fund. I've been told by Bob a certain number. I said it here, and then I was told by people on this board that was not correct. now we you know, Patrick is probably maybe feeling more comfortable enough to say that we have enough reserves that maybe we could reduce them. I don't know whether we do or we don't, because I don't really know what that number is. But I'd rather see us reduce our budget. You know, reduce our budget, reduce our expenses, than, you know, maybe go out with a 0% levy request, and then if we come up short, use reserve funds. Because then at that point, if we have the ability to do that, then we're holding too many reserve funds. So then that's a whole other conversation.
Can't you always abate it?
So
you may abate taxes any time in the future.
So why can't you can't you figure out all the unknowns and just do the prudent thing, and once you know them? I mean, I
well, we never abate around. I mean, we've abated around here once.
We just abated.
When?
Two years ago, 3 years ago, is when everybody got confused on their tax bills.
Right. One time we've abated. But the rest of the time, we've had more revenue than expenses.
Well, you've been here since 1969. I haven't, so...
Well, but it scares me when we say...
They just abated.
Well, one time. I mean, one time we abated. The rest of the time, we are finding... It's my belief we're finding places to spend this money. Or we're putting it in reserves. They're going somewhere, but we're not abating it to the taxpayer. So our track record in history as a board, and I've not been part of it. I might have been here since 1966, that's right. But I wasn't part of this board until May. You know, I get nervous when we start saying, well, we'll just go ahead and do it, and then we'll abate it if we have it. Because I think we'll find places. I think we got places we'll find to spend
money. You certainly could be right, but you're on the board, so you can certainly abate at any time, and you're on the board until 2019. Here's the
one person. We have a minority vote on most of the things. I can say whatever I want if I can't get more people to do it.
I'm with you. I can say whatever I want to it. I said abatement, so I might be the only one. But here's the thing. I mean, just for the record, the most recent abatement, you know, wasn't that long ago. It wasn't, you know, going back to 1966. We don't have to look that long. We can stay in the 2000 teens and know that if they were abated.
Can I ask what was the average savings for tax bill when you abated tax bill?
Just for the record, it was the board right before Patrick Guy, Dean, and Drew got on. Drew and Erica were on the board at the time, and I thought the total was $2.7 million that was abated. So you could go over. Does anybody know if it's more than that? But I think it was $2.7
million. If it was $2.7 million spread over every parcel and business, suppose we could include those in parcels, every taxpayer, I would imagine that the average savings would have been no more than $25. So sometimes when you, that's a political statement you make when you abate, and sometimes it's not as welcomed by the taxpayers when all is said and done.
Well, and I think part of the issue I know I heard with the abatement was, you know, for the one tax bill, there wasn't an increase, but then the next year it actually went up like double.
It looks like it does.
Yeah.
It just looks like it.
I mean, it's
miscommunicating. It's miscommunicating is what I said when I first talked about abatements. I'll debate abatements. And I wouldn't do it again like you did because, like they did, because you first of all, it wasn't communicating because we all pay taxes. I didn't even know it was coming until I got on the board here. But that's a fast forward, and that's what they decided to do. There's a good way to do abatements so people understand them and so that you don't confuse them the next billing cycle coming the other way, because it looks like a huge increase, but it isn't, because your decrease is on there. You have to take all 3 years when an abatement's in line and look at the average billing throughout all 3 years to understand.
I
don't want to talk into, like you said, Joe, debate the abatement, because we're not even there yet. But I do want to point out that $11 million created a guesstimate of $25 over a year in taxes. So, you know, flip that around. Let's just say we cut $11 million out of today's budget. It's going to be a $25 savings a year on taxes. So, I mean, we could talk about cutting things, but
I'm not a finance guy, but if our budget's 53 and we cut 11, So that's down to 42.
Right. Well, I was just trying to think that through.
We didn't pay $11 million.
Each payment, right? So let's just say
I'm not buying. I know
better. I don't know what that number is.
Right.
It depends on the EAP, and that's one way you don't do an abatement.
Right.
Because you don't. Every parcel isn't treated as fair.
No. My conversation wasn't about the abatement. My conversation is we're doing with really rough cuts here. Even if we remove $2 million from the budget, let's just say. Year over year from 2011, everything was net zero, or, you know, net the same. It's $25 a levy tax bill per household.
Yeah, I'm not buying that 25. That's where.
I don't know.
So it might be exactly.
More of you would have to go back and look at the tax bills and tell me what they add.
But it depends on your EAV.
It depends on your EAV, and it depends on what the actual
extension is. How you do the abatements. I mean, that's how this.
Your point is, though, Patrick, is if you use the $25 number, you're saying you could save $2 million, but it's only saving $25.
Right. That's exactly right.
I mean, here's the thing. On people's tax bills, there are two bonds for our district that are expiring. And that analysis is built within here. And it goes up for the approval of the bonds way back whenever they did. Mm-hmm. Many years that was. So they're falling off. So people's tax bills... In 1917 and 18, right? There's two different ones. One falls off in 17, one falls in 18. Now remember, these are only our 2015 tax bills that we're talking about. So it's full 3 years away before the bonds fall off any of us when we go pay our taxes. So, and then the 18, another year, 4 years off. So there is a reduction.
But that's,
in people's taxes.
That's a carve out. That's just associated to
the
bond.
You're paying it. It's on your bill. It's right there. It says D41 bonds. You can see
right.
Bill.
Not to the operator. That's why I go to, you know, if we can say that we're going to go year over year flat with our tax levy, I'm not sure if you saw this, Kurt, but this is a school district financial profile that it was passed out with the budget and it's online, but it tells you how much reserves we have and it gives you a ratio of where we are. Yeah, we're at 34 basis points when, you know, Tier one is 25 basis and above, so we're good with that. That's where I'm talking about. If we go flat with levy of 15's levy, okay, let's definitely take a look at expenses where we can, but we're still relatively high on reserves to take into consideration, you know, maintaining our credit worthiness, reducing levies, you know, we're at 34, maybe taking that to 30 or 27, taking a look at those numbers to see if it's possible. Our expenditure to revenue ratios is 1.01, right? We're still top tier on that. So that's where I'm getting to is I want to make sure if we go down this path, and it sounds like it might be a hard sell, but...
You might be convincing me.
To say that we have the revenues available this way.
You have the reserves available.
Right.
Not the revenues.
Right. The reserves available.
Well, Patrick, I don't have that document here. So what's the number? What's the reserve? What's our number we have in reserve?
Total fund balances, which is all of it's all of them except bond and interest, right? Is $15.65 million. And we need to maintain reserve balances to maintain the creditworthiness, and that's the nice edge, right?
A reserve to pay your bills.
Right. That's the nice edge that you kind of walk to say you have a nice savings account to get the low interest rates without premium, or pay alpha on that, and then you're getting on the back end on the interest rate.
My question on that on your fund is: we have to move from one fund to our capital fund to pay for existing capital projects. Have we done that pre that report,
So that report is a year old.
Right.
I thought there was a date.
That would have they issue that when the annual financial report is issued, and that report is almost a year old.
Yeah, I don't think it takes into consideration.
It's based on the June
30th. Does it take into account the 7?
So that's the bonds that you're paying for the.
So it doesn't take the 7.5 we took out of that. You don't think
yeah.
for the,
no.
for the well, building addition?
I don't know that it includes that, but it includes $7 million we allocated. Depending on the date, there's $7 million allocated for the second editions,
right.
And then there's $1 million allocated, right around $1 million, right, Paul?
Mm-hmm.
For the four
additional
that are currently being constructed now. So what was taken out and when was taken out? That's it's hard for Becky because she wasn't here, and Bob moved those at the appropriate time mm-hmm. to pay for the capital expenditures as the board approved.
Could I move to the next piece, because we're going to have the full board just to start the student fee conversation, so we can so the board or the finance committee can give Becky and myself direction on that. With it being as Becky and I spoke about fund balance, and we've been talking about it on and off for the past couple of weeks, her and I. I believe it's in that $12.2 to $3 million range, but we'll get you the exact number She's back in on Thursday.
Okay.
I think on Thursday.
Well,
she's back in.
Well, let's talk quickly about that.
Yeah, just try to give us your feedback on what.
And we can shift back to right where we left off.
Absolutely. I just want to make sure that we have enough information to bring back to the board on student fees.
The document you have in front of you for student fees outlines what the current fees are. And then there was a spreadsheet showing you the fees that we had collected through last week.
And
some historical information there. So.
And the one thing is we haven't increased fees for 8 or 9 years.
Correct. I believe that's
good. So one of the pieces that we've been talking about, and actually came up in PTA, and Mike brought it up, is this idea around a tech fee, a possible tech fee that's just across the board, because we are... At Hadley, parents have an option to buy a $28 insurance for the kids' PC, or their laptop, I should say.
What's the
Chromebook thing? I was like all over that thing except for saying the right word.
The tech fee right now is a volunteer program for the Hadley parents to buy insurance.
Oh, that's the insurance.
Yeah.
And if they don't buy the insurance and something happens to the Chromebook, they have to replace it themselves.
The cost associated with that damage.
So one way some districts do it is just to put a tech fee so that everyone gets the insurance, and when you get everybody doing it, it probably lowers the insurance fee a lot.
Yeah.
So does anybody know what West does with their...
I think they said this morning that it was rolled. I thought they said it was rolled into their
fee.
So into their basic fee.
Yeah.
120. No. Oh, where's she? Karen.
Because the issue
they talked about it at Team 21. The guy came and talked about it. It was 100. It's either 181 or 121. Something.
Mike.
So I thought that was to go towards the cost of the device, because they pay that every year and over the course of the time at West, it would basically pay for the price and
yeah.
kind of coverage.
Yeah. And do they do a insurance plan at 87?
No,
is that
I'm
part
not sure
of the?
It's an insurance plan.
Okay.
It's Apple Care. I'm not positive.
Yeah.
I can't remember that guy's name. That gentleman's name when he was talking about that.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't catch.
Yeah. No, there was. He didn't say there was insurance, but he said first time they replace it, second time they have a conversation and there's a fee. Third time they have a conversation with the parents. And so I don't think there's insurance.
Okay.
Whoever talked about this morning sounded like it was all rolled into whatever they
That's what we heard this morning.
Yeah. So these fees are for next year when where everybody at the junior high will be have a phone.
They all have now, but
the issue that I brought up this morning with the Chromebook is the insurance is optional. And I'm just going to give my personal example. Like, I know my kids, I'm like, you don't need to bring the Chromebook home, leave it at school. So I didn't even think about getting the insurance because I'm thinking, well, it's going to be at school. I'm assuming they're not going to break it. But, you know, someone had pointed out they're carrying it around the school. They could leave it somewhere. It could get sat on. Things can happen to it. And so I had said, well, you know, if it's part of our curriculum where kids are going to have to be carrying Chromebooks around and they're going to be responsible for them and liable for them if they break, even at school, should the fee or the insurance, whatever, be rolled into our fees versus making it an option?
So do you, as a parent who has a child, do you think that's a good idea?
I mean, it probably makes more sense than making, because, like, I'm just being honest with myself, I was kind of like, oh, I don't need insurance. They're not going to bring it home. I didn't really think
so, but I'm trying
differently, even though we did all sign, as we talked about this morning, we all signed a form that said, you know, you're responsible for it, but
the person doesn't own it. It's leased by the district.
No, yeah, we don't own it.
So how are we buying insurance on something that's leased?
Mike?
I mean,
well,
I guess.
You buy the insurance on the cost of the device. So if it's a $250 device, that's basically what it's covering. They never asked me whether or not they were leased or owned. They would just cover it.
Yeah, they just looked at it.
That would also come to help mitigate some of the support issues that go along with that as well. When you've got 3,000 students with 3,000 devices, if they break, and they do break, whether it's at the junior high or at the grade school, we still are obligated to fix them and get them back in working order. If no other reason to get them back to the leasing company.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, we're just kind of doing them ourselves. So we're repairing the displays and the keyboards ourselves, rather than just having a process where these go out to a vendor, they're replaced or they're prepared, and then they ship them back to us. So we'll kind of streamline some of the support, as well as getting the devices back to the district quickly.
But if I'm leasing something and I break it, part of my leasing agreement is I have to replace it.
Oh, right.
So that's why I'm buying insurance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just so to be clear. That makes sense.
If we go down that path, Paul, I'd like to have a conversation of, instead of digging a second hole where we don't change that tech fee for 9 years, but we say that the tech fee is a percentage of the is a subsidy or percentage of the leased agreement. This way, if lease costs go up, let's just say that's 50-50 split. If lease costs go up, then there's an understanding that we're not going to be paying a $40 tech fee in 2008 or 2018, mm-hmm. and the lease of the triple.
Well, if everybody's, I understand your equation is having an increase in the insurance.
It's a subsidy at a percentage versus a flat fee.
But you have a moving target each year. Now,
right.
I'm with you. I understand why. I'm with, and Stephanie, I believe you said to roll it in, and I'm with rolling it in. I mean, we're going to be 100% one-on-one with Chromebooks.
Right now, With the new.
So, to me, rolling that tech, you can explain that, what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You roll it in. And if families have a waiver, they still have a waiver for that, and then it's paid for.
Yes.
I guess I should preface, too. Like, I'm not even, I mean, I still kind of question fees a little bit in general, but I'm not even 100% sure about our fees, but I guess I do think if we need this insurance, if it's part of the curriculum, it should be part of, it would make more sense for it to be rolled in, but I do question
fees in general.
I should clarify that. I'm not necessarily.
That's fine. I just, you know, Sam used to be 100% against it.
Yeah.
So well, and that's kind of, yeah, I mean, we're saying that they have to have these things, and then we're saying, but now we're going to charge another fee. I don't know. I mean, I get to the point where, how much do we fee and tax people? That's where I'm at. I mean, I honestly, God, where do we stop with this stuff? Now we're rolling this kind of stuff in. I don't know. So,
and that's understandable.
I have trouble with all the fees. I mean, it's a public school. We should be providing these things. I know this has been a debate. I know, you know, I've heard it. I think Sam Black was on this whole thing too. But, you know, anytime we don't know what to do, we just, instead of calling it tax, we throw it in and call it a fee. And somehow we think it feels better.
Well,
I don't know.
A fee is a usage tax. I mean, that's what it is. So from a taxpayer standpoint, from the constituents, as you call them, they rather have usage taxes.
than like when you go through a toll booth. It's a usage tax.
Absolutely.
Then because you're using it, so therefore you pay for it, and that helps subsidize.
We should charge every person who sent a child to school.
Tuition.
Everybody that sends a child to school. Mr. Cooper doesn't have any kids in the system, should pay nothing to District 41. So
then we should
charge all the kids who are using it as a user fee. It's very defined. When you're on a toll road, you're on a toll road, and it's a user fee, and I get that. But in this scenario, it's a public education, it's a public school, and I don't see the equation to that, because if you're going to use that, then you'd have to say, well, if you have kids in the system, you're going to get charged
$15,000. It was an example, but no one, my 40 cents or 75 cents does not pay for that toll road or the portion that I learned in general. It doesn't. So it's
so maybe
exactly like this. I have one other thing.
Okay.
Just so you know, because it's not a dollar for dollar replacement. It's kind of like the activity fees. It's my segue problem.
Mm-hmm.
The activity fees we collected last year, which we've collected less and less each year from what you've provided us. It's down to $12,000. Either tells you one of two things. It could tell you both the combination that less kids are in activities, or it could tell you we have more people getting the waiver. Which is probably a little more consistent with what we've seen in our district as far as people who have fallen into that waiver category. But I personally, the activity fee barely, it marginally subsidizes the offset. It's called an off. I don't know if you use the word offsets. But it's marginal to what the stipends are. To me, I think activities are important for kids. I don't think we should have fees for activities. I mean, I think we promote kids going into activities. It shows it helps with their academic learning. It helps socially and all that. I don't think we should have fees for activities. I just think it's a limiting factor, perhaps for a very small group of people. Maybe it's a limiting factor for no at $30 for the first fee. But I think given the benefits of extracurricular activities, I don't think we should have fees.
And I go the opposite of that.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's a user fee. You're going to participate in it, and it's a smaller number. If a district is saying you have to have the Chromebook, I don't know why then we're burdening parents with a fee. It's part of the public school education that we require. So that for me, an activity fee is something you've decided to play basketball, you've decided to do something after school to offset the cost for the stipend or whatever. That I absolutely get, and I take the complete opposite. The fees,
I agree with Colonel on that. I was going to say, I feel like activity fees are, you know, kind of something extra. You know, the PTAs do it for things that they sponsor, and I know kids that there is exceptions if you can't afford to pay the fees, but, you know, I mean, if you look at it just in the regular fees, we get about $250,000 from it. I almost wonder is there a reduction that could be made in the budget so we wouldn't have to collect those fees. I mean, just one example. I know it says the student fees helps that offset costs for classroom consumable materials and online resources, but I know for kindergarten, for me, I have to print my own I print my kids' homework packets at home, so I'm like, I'm paying a fee for consumable materials, but I print my homework packet, which...
Do you have to do that?
I do. Yeah, they email it home, and they said, mm-hmm. When I've asked, the answer is, well, that's how we've done it for kindergarten, and, you know, I do it, and I'm sure there's probably parents that can't do it, that they get theirs printed for them, but I'm paying a fee for this, and then I'm also providing the printed materials myself, and I'm sure that money's going to other things, but I do kind of question, well, what are we even really using fees for if I have to print my child's homework packets mm-hmm. at home? So I would take the same stance as Kurt. Like, is there a way to have some reductions in budget or reductions in things to not have the fees? People pay a lot of taxes for public education. Could we somehow reduce those?
But that would have to be a full fee review, right? Because
mm-hmm.
we haven't changed this in 9 years.
Yeah.
So the activity fee is $19,000, and to Kurt's point, I'm assuming that hasn't changed in 9 years. So we would say those that participate, we'll stick with basketball. Those that participate in basketball instead, you know, you're going to have to pay that dollar amount's going to probably go up to $20,000 that fee is going to have to be paid by those students, by those. If it's truly a user-based fee for activities, and we have to go through all of these, that says, okay, we're going to true up from the last 9 years that the user-based fee is now going to be at market to user-based activities. And your philosophy, Joe, is part of the educational experience. It hasn't changed in 9 years. Let's just do away with them all.
So let's do this. Let's bring it back to Finance Committee, because just to get a better sense of where the committee's at and what direction you want staff to go and resources you need to make those decisions.
I have one.
Does that work?
I have one.
Oh, yeah, please.
The under as I was reviewing that, and I was trying to look for the document. I had so much of that, but there's a section under resource book sales, and it was $5,000. I didn't know what that was.
Resource book.
It's actually like a.
Is it a return?
Like a plot? Yeah, like a return. Positive. We bring in $5,000.
I have to
go
back.
I was just trying to think that we were reselling.
Last year we collected nothing. There's nothing.
Right.
Right. The prior year was $105. The prior year was $5,000. So you have to go back.
We'll get that for you.
But I, yeah.
One thing on the tech fee is, it would be good to know, obviously everybody's going into this tech world. There's other districts doing things with the insurance, doing things with their tech fee. Are they rolling it in? Do they, which is what Stephanie thought was a good idea, if there were fees, I understand. But is it better to show it broken out?
Well, that's what the high school does. I was going to say it might be worthwhile, since they're rolling up, you know, their iPad process now. The kids pay,
yeah.
I think it's $189.
There,
and that includes, yeah.
And I think at West, too, aren't they paying to, like, they're buying, like, they get the iPad at the end? Do they not, or no, maybe not?
They're paying towards ownership.
They're paying toward ownership, but they can choose not to purchase it. It's going to be 4 years old at that point.
Okay.
So they can choose not to purchase it. But that also covers insurance. So if it gets dropped or broken or whatever, then it gets replaced. So that fee covers it. And they went from, you know, paying for books to the tune of $500 and $600. I mean, my daughter was there; it was like being in college. To then a rental fee, which is I think it's $125 to rent books when you needed books, and then for freshmen now sophomores going in, they have the iPad plus some ancillaries depending on the class.
All right, 728. So I'm going to bring back what are other districts doing with the tech fees. And if they're rolling them in or not. Does that sound okay for the next Finance Committee? All right, we'll adjourn for 2 minutes.